and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Today I'm speaking with Julie Savage. Julie and I share a special bond because we were law school wives together back at the University of Michigan several years ago. She was a dear friend of mine back then, and I have just continued to be inspired and encouraged by her journey. Julie has muscular dystrophy, and while that diagnosis can be inhibiting in a lot of ways, it also serves as a fuel for her to live life to its fullest and to inspire other people. She is so amazing, and you know, she's going to share with us in our interview today about her early childhood years before her diagnosis and grappling with feelings of feeling like something was wrong but not knowing what it was, and then finally getting that diagnosis and feeling that relief coming from "this explains it." And how does this muscular dystrophy affect her motherhood today? She has three beautiful children, a supportive husband, and she just continues to inspire me from afar. This is our first time chatting in a while, so I'm so excited to reconnect with Julie. You're going to love her today, and you're going to love her story. Let's get to it. All right, I want to welcome Julie Savage to the show today. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Jessica.
I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. Where are we talking to you from today?
Okay, so we are living in the Bay Area, south of San Francisco.
And you've been there a while now. How long have you lived there?
Yeah, oh my goodness, like 6.5 years, which makes us like a old timer.
Exactly. I'm sure it's a very transient type area, right?
Yeah.
People in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is super awesome. Well, I know you very well, but for friends and listeners that may not know you, why don't you give a little background on yourself and we'll get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, so I grew up kind of, we moved around a lot as a little kid. And then in seventh grade, we moved to Sacramento, where I graduated high school. My parents have lived there now 20 or 30 years. And then I went to college. I started at Ricks College in Idaho. And then I went on a semester abroad, went to BYU, where I met my husband. And we've been married 13 years. And in the 13 years, we've done law school and moved all over the country. Now we are currently living in the Bay Area, and he is working for a law firm, and we have three kids that just keep us super busy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, when you look over the span of 13 years, like, it's not that much time, but to like really catalog everything you've done as a couple, isn't it amazing how much you like jam into that many years of your marriage?
Yeah, it makes me tired.
Like, I know, right? You don't sit thinking about that too much. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I just think you're an extraordinary mom, an extraordinary person. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into your story and in particular, your medical history. Tell me about your years growing up and what you experienced as a child and then the diagnosis that ultimately resulted for you.
Yeah. Okay. So I am the fifth of six kids born in 9 years. So super crazy, but like totally awesome, you know, childhood with all of my siblings, my best friends, you know, and when I was a little kid, I could never run fast and always bothered me, but you know, just kind of didn't really ever talk to anyone about it. But as I got older, it just got like more and more increasingly different than just being like slow. Mm-hmm. And you know, just started with running, and then like my mom started taking me to the doctors because when I would go up the stairs, I would like kind of push on my leg, and she just thought it looked like too much effort, but that I was like trying to use. And when she took me to the doctors, she like, it just kind of looked like I wasn't really trying that hard, and you know, it wasn't significant enough to really have a diagnosis. So it was kind of like, yeah, should probably work out kind of an attitude. And it didn't, that kind of response. Nobody could quite figure it out. It wasn't significant enough to be able to tell And so we just kind of brushed it aside and kept living life and moving on. And as I got into middle school, it just became, well, and even later, like towards fourth and fifth grade, I remember it being like, just like horrifying, because how it looked was that I wasn't really putting in that much effort. Like I wasn't really trying, but how it felt was like, this is so hard. Like I can't run any faster. I can't, when you're like running around with your friends and then everybody runs upstairs, I'm like the very last by like the whole staircase pretty much. And
would you tell people that you were trying hard or that I don't know what's wrong with me, or would you just blame yourself?
I didn't tell anyone. Yeah. I just kind of felt like, you know, doctors are pretty smart people and they told me I need to try harder. So, yeah, that was kind of it. And so that kind of began like probably my coping strategy for, that, you know, there wasn't really an answer, and I didn't really like the answers that these really smart doctors that know everything were giving me. And so, you know, I didn't talk about it. I just kind of like tried to avoid it a little bit. And as I got into middle school, especially, because, you know, that's when you have like separate PE and, and you like run a lot. And that was like the biggest, that was the very first thing that was different for me in my life was running. And, you know, like I said, it just appeared like I didn't have, like I wasn't trying that hard. And so as long as I kind of kept that attitude, like didn't really let people know how hard I was trying, then it kind of helped me just kind of blend in. And like, when I got to high school, I was like sick, just like with anxiety about like how I'm going to kind of play the Dodge game through like the weekly mile run or, you know, some of those things. And so my mom like recognized that like something was like really bothering me. And even actually the end of middle school probably is when she just basically wrote me out of PE. And we'd been to like enough doctors that had theories of what was going on with me that like she didn't really believe in, and it didn't really make sense that much, but it was enough to just like, whatever, like just write me out of this.
Yeah.
Because she knew that something was up. We had no idea what, but, you know, it was kind of like, well, we'll just write it out. And it was just like such a relief for me. Like, oh,
right.
Still mentally, like I really did feel like, okay, I can fight this kind of a thing. And I can, you know, what doctors had told me is like, you know, my sister that's just a year and a half older than me, but 1 year in school, she was so athletic and she was really skinny. And just like genetically, like she'll always be like a toothpick. And so in my mind, like I felt like it was so hard to move my body. And so I just felt fat. Like I wasn't fat. I just felt like it was really hard to move my body. And so I felt like that was because it was too heavy. And so like at the beginning of high school, especially, I stopped just like eating fat grams. Like, and it's so weird. Like, it's just like such a mental thing. Right.
But you try to control what you could control because you realized you didn't have control over the body part.
Yeah. I don't know what to do, but I'm like, I feel really heavy. And I would exercise compulsively in my bedroom where like nobody could see like exactly how hard I was trying. But my parents were super supportive. I mean, they had taken me to places, but, you know, after hearing like, oh, you know, not everybody can run fast, or you know, you have to work really hard to run fast and things like that. I didn't like going to doctors anymore because like hearing like one more like really smart, know everything kind of person tell me that I needed to try harder was just like, I couldn't handle it. And so I stopped asking to like go to doctors, and I just kind of found like what worked for me. So this is like, I'm 16 at this point, and I'm like really, really skinny, and I'm working out like compulsively, like morning and night in my bedroom, like trying to do like, I would do like crunchies. I would like run in plates, and I would try to do everything that I could. And then we went on this big family hike. Oh, and then this time, like I don't say anything to anyone. It's like, All of my friends, I don't even know if most of my friends from high school would have ever even known. You know, it's kind of shocking when they see me now, like, wait, what? We went on this big family hike, and we were in visiting some family in Idaho. We hiked down to, there was like, I don't even know how many stairs, hundreds of stairs, and going down them, I just couldn't go down them anymore. And normally, like, going downstairs, people didn't get, like, fatigued by, right?
Right.
And so I'm going down these stairs, and I'm like, I was just walking with my dad, and I just kind of, like, said, Dad, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't think this is my fault. And my dad, my parents were just, like, horrified, because it was kind of like, oh, there's got to be an answer for this. And then I was just kind of explaining to him, like, how it felt. And I said, I think I'm ready to, like, go back to the doctors and, like, figure this out, because I don't think this is my fault. And,
wow.
And so we did. And so at this point, like, when I would get up off the ground, like, all of my friends would just, like, pop up, you know, but when I would get up, I'd have to, like, push on my knee to stand up. And, which doesn't really seem like that big of a deal, right? It seems like most, elderly people that we see, that's probably how they also get up, you know?
Right. But you're 16. Yeah.
I'm 16. Yeah. But I'm the only one that, you know, and I was tripping. I tripped, like, my feet when I walk. It's sometimes I would just, like, work myself so hard. My legs were so tired. And so my toes would kind of drag, and I would just, like, fall to the ground, like, in the middle of high school, you know?
Oh, this breaks my heart, Jewel. I'm just picturing, like, the inner, even more than the physical, the inner turmoil that you must have been experiencing.
Yeah,
just breaks my heart.
Hurt when I fall, it was just like, oh my goodness. And see, and when this is all happening, like, I'm working out, like, morning and night. I'm, like, right. Not eating a thing. I'm like, what else am I supposed to do? Like, I can't do this. And, yeah, and I just kind of explained, like, I have to push when I get up. And if I, like, were to get up, it kind of looked, I kind of would, like, push. After I would get up, like, halfway, then I would kind of push my hand on my waist to kind of stand the rest of my body up, which I felt like was so, like, weird. Like, I had never seen anybody do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, my goodness. Because I had been to him, like, all of my life growing, well, as long as, since 7th grade, and this is now 10th grade. And I had been to him, you know, all of those years. And, like, a couple times, you know, he was one of the people that was kind of like, oh, nothing's wrong with you. Just, you know, like, try a little harder kind of attitude. And
right.
So when I said, like, this is how it feels, and I showed him, he was like, oh, my goodness, like, I've never seen this in my life, but I'm pretty sure that you have muscular dystrophy. And he specifically said limb girdle muscular dystrophy. And, like, for the first time in my life, I just felt like, oh, like, I don't even know what that means, but hallelujah.
Right.
Like, you're like, finally, like, it's not my fault. And
right, like, you don't want to have muscular dystrophy, but if that is your answer to it's not my fault, that had to be a huge weight off of you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was 2 years before I even, like, looked up what muscular dystrophy meant. Like,
wow.
I had no idea. My parents were just, like, horrified and devastated and sick. And, like, they were just, like, nothing but hugs and, like.
Right.
My dad had been trying to teach me how to drive, like, our kid car of our family, which was a shift. And, like, I just couldn't quite get it down. And, like, my dad is, like, the world's calmest, most collected person. And he's, like, swearing and, like, so frustrated with me, you know. And he, like, it was probably that weekend, like, we went car shopping and he just, like, bought me my own car. And, like,
you've earned it, yeah.
I know. I think everybody was just like, oh, my. But I didn't even feel any of that. I was just like, oh, like, just the relief that, like.
Right.
Like, I felt like people wanted to kind of, like, you know, mourn with me, but I was just like, oh, there is a reason, and I just felt relief.
So more relief than grief. Yeah.
So that was kind of my discovery of, the first step in the discovery.
Right.
Quite a journey. I didn't really, like, even think about the future of what that meant. It was just kind of, and I didn't really feel like things were getting worse. I kind of felt like it was, like, kind of consistent. So I just assumed that this was my life, and I felt like, oh, okay, I can deal with this. This isn't too bad.
So I have a question real quick. Is it completely lower body for you?
No. So mine affects, like, it starts kind of the in your hips and in your shoulders.
Okay.
This is limb girdle. And, like, muscular dystrophies, I think they cover, like, 45 different diagnoses, like, different types of muscular dystrophy. So the most significant muscular dystrophy, or most visual that most people think of, is the Duchenne.
Okay.
And that's the one, actually, yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the day before, the FDA just approved, like, a drug in, like, to help kind of slow the treatment.
Wow.
So
that's encouraging.
And the muscular dystrophy community is, like, stoked.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. So then limb girdle is basically, it starts by just, like, a weakness in your hips and your shoulders. But that also, like, is an umbrella term for about, like, at least 30 that have already been diagnosed reasons about, like, why that's happening in your body.
Wow.
So yeah, it's definitely like not simple. Like, no wonder that my doctor had never seen anything like specifically what I have, because you know, it's not.
It doesn't just look one way.
Yeah, it doesn't look one way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that helps. Because I'm sure a lot of people maybe know somebody with muscular dystrophy, but it looks a lot different on them. And so you're not sure, like, if you see someone in the grocery store, you're not quite sure because it's such an umbrella term. So I think that's really helpful to kind of paint a broader picture of what it might look like.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you started doing more research, and as time passed, how did the disease progress for you?
Yeah. So, like, by the end of high school, or at some point in high school, like, climbing stairs was, I mean, it was always, like, difficult, but, you know, in high school, when you go to, like, the basketball games and the bleachers are taller, like, the bleachers were really hard, and I didn't like looking different than anybody, so, it seemed like a really big deal to me at the time. Now I'm like, oh, goodness.
Yeah. But as your high school self.
Nothing, right?
Yeah.
And then, so stairs, and then, you know, when I went to college, you know, snow obviously adds in, like, another factor. And especially, like, walking around college campus, and I felt like I could walk forever, but, you know, I couldn't really run. So I didn't really feel like it impacted my life that much. Other than, like, when I would get really tired, I would trip super easily, which was, at that point, like, I was never getting hurt when I would trip, but it, you know, it's like you're in the middle of,
it's embarrassing.
You're tripping, like, all over campus, and that's, like, horrifying. So.
And you look totally normal. Like, it doesn't look like, oh, why is that girl tripping? Because you just look normal.
So it's kind of like, it's like if you saw someone fall, like, you would laugh, right? Like,
right. Oh. Yeah. And that's sad, like, to think that.
People look at me and, like, see, like, oh,
a disabled, like, person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't either, to be honest.
Yeah. Like, interesting.
I never really, associated myself with being different other than, like, I couldn't do these things, but, like, I didn't, like, look to other people to find that.
Would you tell people that that's what you had?
You know, not very often, but every once in a while, like, I just would. And
how would people react?
You know, it's kind of tragic to people. It's so confusing, and I didn't always, like, care for their reaction. So sometimes, like, when I walked, like, I kind of had, like, a little sway to my walk, and people kind of thought it was, like, kind of, like, a sassy walk.
And really?
Like, honestly, like, boys would make comments to me, like people I didn't know. And sometimes it would just bug me, and I would say something to just, like, shut them up, basically.
Right. But it's hard to bring up, like, hi, my name's Julie, I have muscular dystrophy. Like, it's not, like, the first thing you say, but then people probably do start to wonder a little bit. I didn't know for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so, it's got to be kind of an awkward thing. Like, you want to tell people sometimes, but other times you just, you kind of forget, I'm sure, because it's just part of your normal.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, normal kind of, right?
Right. Like, you're normal.
Yeah. Phase of life. And I definitely felt like I had people that I would like be my people that I talked
right,
to, you know,
but right.
I also didn't feel like I was living a sad life. Like I would be really worked up when like I would fall in the middle of campus and like,
yeah.
just be like, oh, what's going on with my body? And like the confusion, it's hard to also bounce out of that conversation. You know, mm-hmm, like once mm-hmm. you start talking about that topic, it seems like so tragic to somebody who just has like an abled body
right.
to like picture, like right now I'm like, only thing that you can see that I can't do is like climb stairs or run, you know?
Yeah, and right.
To think about losing like all of your like muscle ability, like that just seems so traumatic to people to even like comprehend. And
right,
so
right.
It's kind of hard for then all of a sudden, like whoever I'm talking to is going to have like a million questions like, well, will you
right.
end up in a wheelchair? Will you this? And it seems so tragic to people. And I feel really sensitive to like, people's response to a lot of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like you
yeah.
feel like you kind of have to help them through.
Like, right. You're like, I'm the one dealing with this.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I know
so,
what you
long
mean.
Long story short, it's like sometimes it's just easier to just not worry about it.
I get that. I get that
yeah.
for sure. So when you met your husband, Brian, who's so awesome.
Yeah.
What was that like for him to know what you had and then to like envision your future together? Like, what did that look like for you guys?
Well, when I met Brian, I felt like it was a very confident time in my realization of my disease. Like, I had my genetic mapping done, and I had, like, a great doctor that I felt like I could go to when I had questions about, like, what do I do next kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of felt like when I would meet people, and, like, especially people I dated, it's, like, questions for them, like, wondering if that was, like, something that they could handle kind of the attitude. But really, I felt like, you know what, it's like my thing to handle. And like, that's like long down the path of figuring out if, you know, if you'll ever be around to have to handle.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like this is a little premature, yeah.
yeah, but I mean, you would be surprised of like the things people would ask and say. But,
wow.
Or maybe you wouldn't, but but yeah, it's just, I kind of felt like at the time when I was dating Brian, I felt like I like who I am and this is part of me. So there's a lot of unknown and I don't know, like, are you up for this kind of an attitude? And to be honest, like he was kind of like, I don't know, maybe love is blind, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like there wasn't as much conversation about necessarily what was coming down the line because we didn't necessarily know. Like there wasn't Facebook at the time to
yeah.
connect with people. Like I'd never met anybody. Like when I would tell people that I had muscular dystrophy, I would say, oh yeah, like I have a really mild form. Like it's not really that big of a deal, you know, kind
mm-hmm.
of an attitude. And I really felt like that at the time. Like, oh, we got this.
right.
Yeah. So, and Brian was kind of, I think he kind of felt the same way. Like, I was totally open with everything I knew about it and the fact that I didn't know, like, most about, like, what the future was. But,
yeah, I love that. I love that he saw you. He didn't see your disability. He saw you. And
yeah.
just like any of us, like, there's always parts of us that are weaker or different or uncertain. But if they love you, that's all that matters. Like, it's about you guys. It's not about, no one knows their future. That's true
right.
for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely probably what, didn't scare them off, for sure. Absolutely,
yeah.
for lack of a better term, you know? Like,
yeah.
So let's go into when you wanted to start your family and have your sweet little girl, Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more difficult for you to get pregnant or carry a baby, or what's that like for somebody with muscular dystrophy?
You know, I had absolutely no problem, like, actually getting pregnant.
Uh-huh.
We did definitely, like, ask my doctor, like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
what is this going to look like? Is this going to affect my kids? Is this going to pass on to my kids? And you know, they're literally, like, my daughter's 10 now, and so that would have been, like, 11 years ago that we were having these conversations and there just was not that much information.
Wow.
But I kind of looked at my life and I felt happy, you know,
yeah.
I went through some really hard things, but I felt like I just felt really happy
yeah.
and like I had a great life. And, I really enjoyed, you know, the things that I had going on at that point with school and work. And I just kind of felt like, I don't know, like if she has it, like, yeah, there we, or I didn't know it was a she, I guess, but if, you know, my kids have this, like, I feel pretty happy. Like, I don't think it's worth, like, not bringing a child into.
Yeah, because, I get that. I
like,
get that.
You have to go through something hard. Like, it's kind of hard when you know that that's a possibility, like, because there's all sorts of options. But I just kind of felt like I just wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
Like,
you'll deal with that.
What it takes,
yeah,
you know? Like,
right.
And I kind of felt like that was kind of my style, is like, okay, I can handle this today. Like, thinking about the future, like, is a little bit scary sometimes, but
yeah.
I'm good today. Like, I got this.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so for muscular dystrophy, is it something that they can test for early on, like before, you know, your child starts walking or symptoms start manifesting itself? Or is it something that is more down the road?
Yeah, it depends. Like, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, types. What happens
okay.
if you have, like, if you have breakdown of muscle. So it's kind of hard to explain muscular dystrophy because,
yeah.
like, a lot of different components are basically, like, your muscle is like wearing out faster than other people's muscles.
Okay.
And some are like wearing out like super, super fast. And some are just like over time, the muscle tissue is breaking down. And it's all like in your genetics. So there are genetics tests that you can do now. 11 years ago, they were like, you know, crazy expensive. You would never just run like a random test for my disease. But now it's easy to do like a saliva test and see if you have the genetic mutation. But the easiest way to do it is when you're noticing weakness. It's a really cheap test to check your CK levels in your blood. And so like a normal person would have like in the hundreds.
Okay.
Just because your butt muscles are always, you know, growing, breaking down, building, like just part of the process
right.
that's going inside of our body. But like someone with a muscle problem where your muscle tissue is breaking down would have like in the thousands.
Oh, okay.
Know? So it's super cheap to run and it's really easy if you suspected
right.
like that something is wrong ever, then it's really easy to just, you know, run a blood test and have that done.
So did you ever do that on any of your children?
Yeah, I obsessively have my kids' CK levels.
Yeah,
checked.
I would.
Because, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
just to give you peace of mind.
Yeah, my disease is called limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, and it's type 2I. So, and that is basically, it's a recessive disease. So in order for me to have gotten it, my parents were both carriers of this gene, and it won't show up in anybody unless you have two copies of it from your
okay.
parents, like from each parent.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for my kids to get it, Brian needs to be a carrier. So it's not very likely.
Right.
But, you know, anytime like they like complain about anything, I'm like,
yeah,
okay, let's just go get our blood tested. And,
yeah. Right.
But,
right.
But
keep that ruled out.
Not to like totally mess them
yeah.
up.
Yeah. exactly.
Not to worry, but at the
yeah.
same time, it's not hard to.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So, so once you started, so once you got pregnant with Anna and, you know, your belly's getting bigger and you're adding
yeah.
weight and everything, did that affect your symptoms and how you felt on a day-to-day basis more than any other pregnant person probably?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like, adding, I don't remember, like 30 pounds, right.
Yeah,
to everything
right.
I did in my life and like putting it right on like the hardest, like
your hips
that were most affected in my body. You know?
Right.
I was working when I had Anna. I sat down like most of the day and then, but that was like kind of hard to like bounce out of. Like it was kind of better to just like always stay moving slower. But I kind of felt prepared for it. Like I didn't even know if it would be hard to have kids or if I would have to be like bedridden or, you know, you
right.
hear terrifying stories of women having babies that don't have muscle diseases. So I just
right.
figured everything in my life was harder that pregnancy probably would be too.
Yeah.
So I think my expectations were set for like, okay, I really want to do this, but it's going to be really hard. And then it actually wasn't too bad. Like it was like obvious things that would be hard for me, but like I had like pretty ideal pregnancies.
That's so lucky.
Like,
yeah.
I never had to use any kind of assistance. There were a couple times like when she would sit on like my sciatic nerve and like my whole leg would go
oh.
You know, I was like, calling my doctor instantly, making appointments, and like confidentially telling them what happened. He's like, oh, like that has nothing to do with muscular dystrophy. That's like your sciatic nerve. Yeah. And so I was like, I can't walk, like I'm holding onto the wall. So
yeah, well, that is really fortunate that it wasn't that much harder, because that's
my delivery. It was great. It was great. Everything was just like, oh, we got this.
Yeah. So, oh, what a blessing. And so once she was born, tell me about those early days of motherhood for you. What do you remember about those early days with Anna?
You know, like I said, I just totally expected the worst because of, like, you know, you hear stories of just like it being hard. And so I assumed because my life is hard, I will probably have like this be really hard.
Right.
But, and so I just kind of felt back to that same relief that I felt when I got my diagnosis, was like, oh, I can do this. And like, I love this. Like, aww, this is like the greatest thing ever. And I just like totally doted on her for like every like thing she did. I was just like, oh, this is like the greatest thing in the world. And I was totally like that type of new mom, just like I have just like way too many pictures of like nothing, you know?
Right, exactly.
Like, oh, look how cute that is.
She's the first person to ever curl her hand like that, or make that face.
Yeah. And all these positions, I just remember melting and gushing over. And now I look at it, I'm like, oh, like,
first time mom.
And I just kind of felt like I expected like it to be a lot harder, but I couldn't like lift her off the ground. So I would like, instead of like being like, I would sit on the ground with her, but then I would have to like move her to the couch first, and then I would have to do my little shimmy to stand up, and then I would have to like pick her up off the couch instead of just like popping up with her. So it was kind of like, not that big of a deal. There were some things I just didn't do probably that maybe some other, you know, I'm not like going for jogs with her, but I went for walks like all the time. And I was great. It didn't feel that significant. And I felt like when I talked to my doctor about having kids, it's kind of like the younger, the better kind of. And my body was still young and like what seemed like significant things at a time, but like not really in the world of muscular dystrophy. I felt like I bounced like right back, and like something about like nursing like pulled like all of the fat off of my body, and so I felt really light. And
just, I'm sure, especially going from, you know, gaining the 30 pounds to carry her to suddenly being down 30 pounds again. You're like, wow, I can carry this much weight around,
Yeah, totally. And you know, some women with muscular dystrophy, they don't have that. Like the pregnancy kind of like triggers or inflames or does something. But I felt really grateful that didn't have that experience. So
And you mentioned too that pushing a stroller around helped you with your balance and your stability and everything. And so, did you kind of feel more like a, I don't know, quote unquote normal mom as you're pushing the stroller?
Totally
normal. Yeah.
I didn't associate myself with, if I saw somebody like having a hard time physically, you know, I couldn't visually see like what it looked like for someone else to see, like maybe, you know, it was harder for me to lift the stroller in and out of the car or the car seat in and out of the car, but you know, it was just kind of what I was used to. And so other people may have seen that and been like, oh, let me help you with that. But I didn't feel it, you know, I didn't feel any different than other people.
Yeah. That's really interesting that you didn't see yourself maybe the way other people may or may not have been seeing you, which I think probably helped you mentally. Right.
Yeah.
To just do life, just keep going. And so was adding your second child, Luke, something that you had to really think hard about, or was that just kind of a natural, we're going to have another one?
Yeah, I definitely thought like hard about like when the right time was. Like my cousin had a baby the same time as me and she was having another one. And I was like, oh, like I love being a mom and I loved having a baby. And so it's like, I wanted to too, but I kind of also felt like, wait, how would I do that? And how would I do that pregnancy thing that's going to be really hard and, like, still carry my baby? I waited. The kids are 3 years apart, but it wasn't, like, you know, and I think because other people would see me, and it was, like, a little bit of a struggle to visually see me doing things that were hard for me, again, like the comments, like, oh, how are you going to do that? Kind of an attitude. Hmm. Like, and I wish that I wouldn't have cared as much as I cared about, like, you know,
right,
like trusting other people's opinion over, like, you know, people visually see me doing something hard and they would be like, oh, like, it's just like all these millions of questions. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
I had it. I was under control. Like, right. You know, and I wish I was the kind of person that like, wasn't really affected by like other people's response to me.
Yeah.
And I think I'm getting better at that, but,
right.
And but so, yeah, it did make me question myself a lot. Like,
right.
Oh, yeah, I can't do, you know, I can't like quickly, I can't like, be on the phone holding a baby and like making bread.
My yeah.
I can't do those things. So maybe
right.
I shouldn't have another baby.
Yeah.
You know, just like all those silly, silly things that like kind of get you worked up.
Yeah. And so like you're saying, like some people would respond in a way that was not helpful or desirable to you. What did you like to hear or what did you like people to do for you? So if your friend did see you struggling to get up or lifting the stroller, like, did you like it when people offered to help or did you want to maintain that kind of independence? Do you want people to point that out?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm really good at like telling people how they can help me.
Yes.
But at the time, like, I didn't really know. Like, I didn't really know like how anybody could help me. Like when I would need to get off the floor, like
yeah.
I didn't, like, you can't physically like really lift me. I mean, people had tried, like if you pulled my arms, like my shoulders aren't strong enough to like really take that help. And so like people would want to help me, but then like their help that they would want to give me wouldn't be helpful, but then I wouldn't want them to feel bad. But, like,
right.
Actually, like just, but now I feel totally fine just like, oh, you know, just stand there and talk to me. And and I'll get up. My husband is very strong. And so he, like, I feel like tosses me around very effortlessly. And it's just not really that big of a deal. Like, he'll, like, pop me up from the ground or from, like, a chair or something. And then we, like, carry on. It's not like he pops me up and then we have this big, sad discussion about how, like, that was really hard.
You know,
it's just kind of like you move on. I don't expect my friends to fully understand like every single feeling that I'm feeling inside my body or, you know, I mean, sometimes you have a friend that you want to just like vent to and like, and gush with, but every day in my life is full of really hard, like physical things, but it's just, it's part of my life. And so,
but it's also full of very typical things and mother duties that you can also talk about.
Yeah. So I think that like, for a friend that's going through something hard, the thing that is really helpful is to just kind of let them ask you for help and like kind of just being like, okay, well, I'm here if you need me. So, you know, and then like move on, you know,
right.
Like,
okay.
And allow your friends to, and part of that is like the person themselves. Like, I think that it's good in whatever you're going through in life to like, to take a minute and think about, like, how someone can help you, because sometimes they can and sometimes they can't. And so just being able to trust yourself and then also to trust your friend that, like, they probably know better than you. You might think of, like, a bunch of million of suggestions, and they've probably already thought of a lot of those things because they're, like, down in the trenches with it.
Right. Yeah, because as a friend, like, you want to help, but until you really know the best way to help, you might say nothing, and that might kind of build up a barrier between you, and you don't want that. So I like that, just asking, I'm here for you, whatever you need, you know, and just let me know how I can help. Otherwise, just talk about the theater class, or talk about karate, or talk about the normal kid stuff, right?
Right, yeah. Well, and I think it is okay to, like, I think it is healthy to, like, ask questions about the disease too, but I think it's also like okay to just like move on from that
So if I were at the park or at the school meeting somebody new and I noticed maybe they were having a hard time getting up or they had a walker or they were in a wheelchair, what would be the best way for, if I genuinely wanted to kind of go to the next level in that friendship or wanted to support them, what would be the best way for me to approach opening that door to letting them know that I'm here and I want to know a little bit more about what they're going through and what that is.
Yeah, I think that the best thing to do in people that have, like, any kind of differences that you're not currently experiencing is to not assume that, like, they're living a sad life.
Okay, yeah.
Like, if they're at the park, like, with their kids, they're probably, like, I mean, maybe not probably, but they probably, like, want to enjoy a day at the park.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like, maybe they'll want to, like, open up to their disease, and maybe they really need that. Or maybe they just want to talk about, like,
right,
their kids. And then, like, if they drop something, like, oh, let me get that for you. And not, like, let me get that for you. Now tell me about, like.
Right, okay.
You know?
That's really helpful.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, I think that, at some point, like, you, I think everybody comes to, I think that visually, like, when you have any kind of physical equipment, it gives you, like, all of a sudden, like, all of your vulnerabilities are out there.
Right,
and you get to keep going, you know? And I think everybody has those things, but they're not so visual for other people. So I feel like when I started using, like, actual equipment, it just kind of felt like, I felt like people were smiling at me more, you know? Hmm. Like, they weren't really confused by me. They just knew, like, I mean, not smiling. I don't
know. Yeah, right. They had more compassion and, yeah, right.
Like, good for you. Let's go get them, girl. Like,
yeah.
Underdog. You know, just, like, my life is, like, visually just, like, shocking to so many people. But
yeah.
I just kind of.
Yeah, I was listening.
You know,
yeah,
I like to make people laugh and move on.
Right, right. I was listening to another podcast, and it was with a person that had dwarfism, and she's like, I get a lot of looks from the get-go because of my stature, but, you know, that's what I'm dealing with, like, physically, but there's plenty of people, like, in any given situation, they're dealing with lots of different things, but it might just not be on the outside. Like, everyone's dealing with something. And so the moral of the story is we need to treat all people with kindness and compassion and respect and everything, because whether it's something that people are visually seeing on the outside or somebody might be really struggling on the inside, like, everyone's going through stuff. And so we just need to be a lot kinder and more compassionate in general, regardless of whether we can see that somebody's having a hard time.
Exactly right. I remember, I can't even believe I can say something like, oh, I remember 15 years ago, but I remember it was probably.
You're so old. Yeah.
I know. It was 15 years ago, because I remember hearing a talk from a woman who said, just assume everybody is trying their best.
Yes.
Yes. I feel like I think about that all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? They are probably trying their best. And I hope that people. And I feel like me having, you know, now I use, like, a scooter, and, like, if I'm walking, like, I have a cane. And I feel like that gives everybody a visual, like, you know, she is trying her best. And I feel like once people, like, the people that aren't, like, totally, like, oh, my gosh, and shocked and, like, mortified of, like, oh, no, like, don't, you know, don't move.
Yeah, kind of right.
I definitely feel like people are kind of cheering for me.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just by showing up and doing, like, focusing, switching the focus to, like moving on a little bit.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Just like, okay, set up my life. It's inconvenient. It's not catastrophic. Like,
right.
It doesn't mean what I thought it meant once upon a time, you know?
Yeah, you're still highly involved in your kids' sports and school events. And, I mean, you're a go-getter. You know, and it may look a little bit different, and you may move a little bit slower to get there, but it doesn't mean it stops you from doing anything, right?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it used to take me, like, the entire day to, like, clean my house, like, literally.
Yeah.
And then, like, at the end, I had nothing left for my kids, and I had nothing left.
Right.
And then I started having somebody do it for me, and I'm like, oh.
And now look at me be a mom. Yeah.
A little bit better.
Yeah, I think that's important.
And I think, like, taking the things off our plate that, like, we're not capable of, like, you know.
Right. How can you be a better mom? How can you have more energy for your kids?
Just figuring out what you can do and what you can't do, and just really emphasizing that. I love.
Yeah.
I love my kids' school and my friends there and the community that we have at the school. And so I definitely have figured out, like, at the school what, like, I feel so much fulfillment from and what I enjoy doing with my kids. And so
yeah,
that's
I love that. I love that so much. So in what ways has this affected your kids? And what has this taught them, seeing their mom overcome this challenge and just go at life every day with happiness and joy?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm hoping I'm not, like, messing them up. I would never
claim we all think we are.
All
yeah.
figured out. But I do feel like when Anna was in second grade, so that was, like, she's in fifth grade, 3 years ago, was I was still, like, trying to keep up. And, like, I had my stroller that I would use kind of more of as a walker because nobody wanted to sit in it anymore. And I remember thinking, like, I was really tired at the end of every day, and I was falling a lot more. And, like, now instead of just, like, trying to figure out a way to get up, I was, like, breaking body parts. And
wow.
And just, like, it would knock me out for a couple weeks because I would, you know, just have these accidents that were happening. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, I don't know what to do at this point. And I still kind of felt pretty reserved on, like, how to explain to people. I just felt complicated. And I also felt like I felt complicated, but I felt like I only have so much time. I want to enjoy this. I don't want to live in the future too much yet. But I felt like I was kind of there. Like, I don't really know how to cope with this. And then up to this point, I'd still never met anyone with my disease. Like, I'd never met anybody that, like, had been, I've met people with muscular dystrophy that weren't as affected, or, like, different forms of limb girdle that were affected, like, more mild than what you would think of. But I've never met anybody that kind of, like, was still a mom or anything else. So I just kind of felt like I compared myself to able-bodied, like, expectations on like, what I needed to do in order to, like, you know, take care of my kids. And I, like, randomly one day, I opened up this muscular dystrophy magazine, and there was, like, just a teeny little paragraph about a woman who had my disease, like, the abbreviation for it is LGMD2I, and she had started a website, and I was just like,
yay!
I seriously spent, like, the whole day just, like, staring at it, and, like, staring at her. I'm like, oh, she looks just, like, so healthy. She was, like, gorgeous. She had these daughters that were in high school, and they, she had pictures of them, and, like, there was, like, a little video of them singing. They had these amazing voices, and I just felt like I was looking, like, 10 years in the future, and, like, oh, like, see, like, it's okay to, like, they look really happy, and, like,
right.
Their kids seem to be just totally thriving, and I just kind of felt like, okay, it's all going to be okay, and I felt like she linked me to, like, this whole world of, like, hundreds of people that have, like, my exact diagnosis, and it was just crazy to have that in common with someone, like, after, you know, 30 years of not having any of that. And then, and so I felt like it connected me with people, like, okay, this is what you do. Like, basically when this, like, just kind of pioneers in the disease that, like, had figured out, like, their how to's of, like, how to get to this next phase. And so,
right.
So yeah, that's when I started using, and it was a big step to think of, like, how to use a cane. And, but, you know, like, the biggest, like, blessing, I guess you could say, is that I had kids in elementary school, and kids are the best. I started using a cane because I needed it, and my friend gave me her. She had a hurt foot, and so she went out and had bought this, like, bright pink, like, flowery cane that was kind of cute, you know. And so my friend gave it to me when she was done with it, and so I started using it. And this little girl walked up, and she's like, "Why do you have a cane?" And just, like, all these questions, like, "Oh, my legs aren't that strong." She's like, "Oh, you're still so pretty." And I was like,
"Oh."
And then that was it. And then we started talking about, like, something totally random, and right. you know, like, that kid. And I'm like, "Oh, I love kids. Just, like, move on." And
right.
Because it was a really big step for me. And then the next step that we had was, as that was, like, still to, you know, the next, like, maybe a year later is when I needed to get a scooter. And that was mostly because I couldn't safely, like, walk across the school campus with, like, hundreds of children running around me. I couldn't really take my kids to the park because I would just have to stand the entire time because, so it went kind of, I feel like the major steps that, that I had was, like, the ability to run and then the, like, climbing stairs and getting off the floor. But then, like, I feel like the first, like, real pain that I lost was that it was a little bit harder to avoid was, like, the ability to get out of a chair, than just, like, an average-sized chair. So those are the muscles that were mostly affected. And so I would go to the park with my kid, but I would just have to stand the entire time, and that would make me so tired by the end of the day. And so then I would be too tired, and I'd like start falling all over the place. And so I got the scooter, and I remember just kind of staring at it, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to like prepare other people for this transition or like explain it. And I kind of like asked a couple of friends their opinions, and I didn't really like their approach on it. And I kind of felt like, you know what? Forget you all. Like, this is what I need. And I just kind of like just showed up in it one day, and I just like kept my head high. I knew everybody was like staring and questioning and like so confused. And I just kind of just went for it. And, like, kids are the best because they think it's, like, the coolest thing.
Right.
And my daughter, my kids were, like, I mean, A, like, we got to do so much more. I went to the zoo, and, like, we just went through the zoo so fast. I was, like, wow, this whole time, like, you poor things have just been waiting for me to catch up with you, you know?
Aww.
Like, because I was so slow. And then, like, all of my kids' friends were just, like, oh, can I go for a ride? And my kids thought it was, like, the greatest thing when I would let my second grader, like, take him for little spins, you know, and then it was the same time they started roller skating, and so they would all hold on to the back and, like, form, like, this big train, and we would, like, roller skate.
Oh, my gosh, I can picture that, yes.
To the back, and, like, it was just, like, such a relief for everybody. I felt like it's like, looking at this life that I was, like, totally just doing everything I could to avoid, like, a wheelchair, or, you know, I just felt like I just fought it. Like, I was going to do everything I could to, like, avoid that. But, I felt like it's what I needed at a time. And so when I, like, took care of myself, I just kind of felt like, oh,
yeah,
like, this isn't as catastrophic as I thought it would once be. Like, I thought it was kind of like when I got my diagnosis, and once I realized that, like, that was sometime in my future, I kind of felt like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can and live my life before it ends when I sit in a wheelchair. But I kind of sat down in this chair, and I felt like, yeah, like, this like gives me so much more life, you know, like,
allowed
me to do so much more with my family. And yeah,
totally. It opened new doors. And yeah, and it's so interesting that the very thing that you thought was maybe going to hold you back really opened the doors for you.
Yeah.
I love that. And it's kind of like the quote, you teach people how to treat you. And it's like, what really inspires me about you, Julie, is the positivity. And you can really sense from yourself that you don't view yourself the way maybe other people would from the outside. And so people do treat you pretty normally, probably for the most part, because that's how you are teaching people to treat you. You are Julie Savage, normal mom, doing the mom thing with three kids, you know, going to school, you know, cheering on your kids, being an awesome wife. You may do it in your own way, in some physical ways, but overall, you're just an extraordinary mom doing the mom thing. No. And that's what I love about you. You are.
I am, like, down in the trenches trying to figure out this, like,
I know.
How to do it all. But I do feel, like, a lot more in common with people than I think that they relate to.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think that's an important thing to point out. So when people are viewing you and wondering, oh, should I offer to do something or should I say something, just talk to them like a person. Talk to you like a person, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Wow.
And I do try to, like, not, like, be offended by people, you know, because I think it comes from a good place.
Yes, but I'm sure people do say dumb things. Yeah.
But, like, maybe just think a little bit before you open your mouth.
And I'm sure that's teaching your kids a great lesson about what to say and what not to say and how to treat people with differences.
Yeah. We do live in this, like, total melting pot of the Silicon Valley, and, I feel like that I love being here because I feel like everybody is really different from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just on, like, every imaginable level. And so I kind of feel like everyone is doing that a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of different languages going on, a lot of different abilities, a lot of different intelligence levels, or just
I don't know.
I just feel like we are in a melting pot, and I like to be a part of that because I feel like I still have stuff to offer. Like I don't feel like a sad person, and I feel like it still feels really good to contribute. So I don't necessarily feel like I'm on my deathbed, you know, like it might appear to other people that are experiencing differences, but
I like that perspective that you're just part of the melting pot, and we all are, we are all contributing something unique and different, and that's special, and we can all learn something from each other who is different from us. And I love that. I love that. Oh, Julie, I just think you're so amazing. And I just really appreciate you sharing this. I know that so much of this journey is so personal and sensitive, because this has been a hard journey in a lot of ways and an empowering journey in other ways. Yeah. But still, I think your message and your story will really educate a lot of people, and definitely encourage people that regardless of what they're dealing with, whether it's physical or emotional or just whatever, I know that it will be an encouragement to a lot of the listeners today.
Oh, thanks, Jessica.
I think you're amazing.
You're doing great things.
Oh, thanks. It's so fun doing this podcast. Well, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I feel like I would tell myself, like, just something so basic, and that would be to, like, don't sweat the little things, you know, like, let it go, enjoy it, because it goes really fast. All of a sudden, I have a 10-year-old, and a lot of the things that just seemed just, like, such a big deal they weren't a big deal, you know, and they're not deal breakers.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think we can get so sucked up in the to-do list that we get to the end of the day, and we're like, I didn't even like look my kids in the eye, you know, like sure, my house is spotless and they ate a good dinner and they got everywhere on time, but I didn't hug them.
Yeah.
I didn't tell them how awesome I think they are. I didn't read with them, you know, whatever it is that like really connects you with your kids, and those things that are really enjoyable about, there's a lot of things that are not enjoyable about motherhood. I mean, let's just be honest. There's a lot of not fun stuff, but there's plenty of stuff that's awesome. And don't, like, replace the things that you think you have to do and forego the things that are super amazing and life-giving about motherhood.
Yeah.
And we all do that. We all fall in that category on some days, you know. So I think just setting our intention every new day, it's like, today I'm going to connect with my kids. What can I do today that's enjoyable? And I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that, Julie.
Yeah, I think letting go of, like, what you can't do. Like, your kids don't really care. They already know, like, that you're not going to go for a run with them.
Yeah, exactly. And they'd rather eat cereal.
Like, taking the time to enjoy, like, what you can do. I feel like, who knows how long you'll have the ability to do that thing. So just try to
do what you can.
Do what you can.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Julie. I think you are truly extraordinary, and your kids are so lucky to have you.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you. Okay. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I hope you have an awesome day.
All right, you too. Bye, Jessica.
Bye. I am so proud of Julie. This is something so personal for her to open up about. But it is because of how affected she was by other people's stories of hope that she agreed to open up about her own journey. And I know that regardless of what you may be facing in your life today, whether it's a physical disability or a mental affliction, whether it's just, you know, struggles with your kids, we're all going through something today, and we get to choose how we approach it. We all have a valuable story to share, and we never know how our story is going to affect somebody else if we just share it. And so I encourage you to share your story, share your experiences, and make connections with the other moms around you, because you never know who might need your story today. If you don't already do so, you can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, and on iTunes and on our website, there's a whole archives of how many episodes have we done? This is number 88. So there's 87 other episodes before this one that might resonate with you. So dip back into the archives and check out all the amazing moms that we have there. You can always get more information on the website, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. And you can find information in our show notes today about Julie.
So thanks for joining me today on the podcast. If you love it, share it with a friend, leave a review on iTunes. It really helps new moms to find the show, and it means so much to me. I hope everyone has an awesome day, and I'll see you next time for another episode with another extraordinary mom.